Hey, welcome back to JK Moto Podcast, a weekly motorcycle podcast for the everyday rider, covering current bike and racing news, specializing in track days, club racing, and great entertainment. We truly do it all. And this week, we are here in Stable B. Cole is not with us this week, as you can probably see, but I got my good friend Kelly. He'll introduce himself here in a second. We're here in Stable B, one of our favorite places to talk about many things besides Stable B. Quick introduction, I'm Kelly, relatively new rider.
Yeah.
I know I say that a lot to you, and so yeah. You're probably getting old by now for the audience. Relatively new, not a whole lot of motorcycle experience in the background.
Zero.
Zero, okay. No bicycle riding growing
up?
Yeah,
none of that.
Okay, so we'll get into that a little bit. And now, I would say you're riding motorcycles, not just commuting, not just on the road, but you're doing track days. Have had some training, have been low-key almost as much all over the country as I have. Maybe not quite.
Not yet, but we'll get there.
And has, I think what I really want to get into tonight, we'll see where the night takes us, but is just kind of the progressed curve that you've had when it comes to riding and learning and all that, and how the track has kind of influenced that. And what brought you motorcycles in the first place? Because I know, you know, we've been friends for a while. When we first talked about it, you were pretty hard-pressed against.
Yeah, I didn't have the funds for it at the time. I also didn't realize how cheap motorcycles would be getting into initially.
Yeah, compared to the alternative, which is life on four wheels.
Yeah.
So we'll dig into that in a second. But that is what we've got for you tonight. Once again, here at Stable B, by your very own JK Moto Entertainment channel. Welcome to it. Let's go ahead and roll an intro. And then we do have to talk about a rider tip tonight. And then we'll get into the episode. So stay tuned.
Yesterday at one point, I was in sixth.
Unfortunately, we don't have a cold night to bring us back, so that's as much as you're going to get. But I think, Kelly, before we get started, we should go ahead and kick off a rider tip. How do you feel about that?
Let's do it.
Sweet. So this week's weekly riding tip, I have my cell phone here, in case you guys were wondering, is brought to you by Bendinger Motorsports, which is private coaching to build solid riders through vision-based training. And I think we might talk about that a little bit tonight. We got a pretty good first-hand taste of that. I know you guys have heard about that for the last couple weeks, but it was a sweet trip, so got to talk about it. Anyway, Josh Bittinger tonight has to say, get in the zone and stay there. When you're sitting on the grid ready for the lights to go out, it's go time. You're focused and ready to send it, then it slides out. Each rider gets in their own zone, whether it's an aggressive kill mode or calm, calculated ride. Whatever your zone is, stay in it. Don't let anything rattle you. Don't get in your head. Believe in yourself and stay focused. Don't let any doubts or demons in. Each turn should be complete focus. Gas, brake, tip, trail, reference marker. The mental toughness to stay focused no matter what is critical to running your absolute best race. Be tough and stay in it. So that is this week's weekly riding tip. Once again, brought to you by Josh Bittinger over at Bittinger Motorsports. Kelly, you're not racing yet.
No.
And that tip is definitely kind of race focused, but I would like to think that it could be applied to track days also. Kind of going back almost to the mantra thing that Josh mentioned. What's your take on that?
I definitely agree, because there are definitely times when I go out kind of rush, blow a few corners because you're like, hey, it's not in the right mind space. And then you kind of just get in your head and becomes a vicious cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And then come in, pit, just even take a few corners a little slower, reset yourself, and you can get a better result usually, at least in my personal experience. But so I definitely can understand getting the right headspace prior to going out there.
Yeah, I mean, the few corners slow, I don't...
Not necessarily a few corners slow, but maybe not at whatever your 100% pace is, just trying to reset yourself.
Oh, no, I agree 100%. There's definitely been times where, yeah, you blow a corner, and you're like, whoa, and then the next one's off, and it is, that's also like, that just goes into the race line. Like, you realize how important being on the line is, because you blow one corner, and all of a sudden you're off for the next one, and then if you don't set up and regain your line where you want to be, that ruins you for, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, whatever after that. But I personally will not come in for a track day session unless I'm like out of gas. That's the only thing that'll bring me in, because I just For me, it's a money thing. Which,
that's fair.
Like I said, we'll talk about money. But I paid for the track day. I paid for that track time. And if there's anything I can do to make sure I get all my track time, I'm going to do it. I'm going to stay out there. So I will take the kind of like, yeah, okay, let's take a couple corners slow. Or a lot of times, if there's a track that has a big straight, that's like my favorite because I can just, okay, don't care about lap time. Let's just putt it. We'll stick to the edge so we make sure anyone that wants to pass can pass. Like, you ever seen that that meme of the dad at the rest stop after passing all the semis? The wife's got to use the restroom, so he stops and like, just mad that all the semis are passing right by. And so that's how I feel sometimes. I'll hit the straight and I just sit there and I'm like, yep, here goes everyone that I just spent all that work passing. That guy, like, I know that guy is, no offense to whoever he might be, but I know that guy's slow and I can get him. And there he goes, thinking he got me, but I needed a second to kind of reset and refocus. So that's a good point you brought up. But yeah, I mean, I can say have only done the one race weekend, but it's different when you're out there on the grid. You gotta, because there is a light. Right, like for a track day, it's your turn to go. You just kind of go. You can slowly warm into it. You can take a whole session where you're just kind of chilling. You can take a whole day where you're just chilling. When you're racing, if you want to race, like, you got to do it. That's it.
Fair.
That's all there is to it. And if not, then you really don't have any business being out there because you're just going to throw other people off and be kind of a hindrance. So, anyway, good tip from Josh, unless you had anything else on that.
No, that's all I had.
All right. We appreciate it, Josh. Thanks for bringing us those tips. We'll keep them coming. Once again, Bittinger Motorsports operates down at MSRH, which we learned is Motor Speedway Resort Houston, as opposed to Motorsport Ranch. Anyway, we'll have a link in the description for Josh's camp down there. Go check him out. It's well worth it. All right. It's time to dig in. You ready?
Sure.
All right, I want to start at the beginning. When I met you, you were driving a Toyota Camry.
Corolla, but yeah, same.
Corolla, sorry. They're all the same.
Hey, it was reliable.
Reliable, cheap, gets you from point A to point B, good gas mileage, all the other jazz. But you quickly went to Toyota 86 or Scion?
Scion FRS, same.
Okay,
same.
All right, the FRS. And it was a stick shift. You specifically want to learn how to drive manual?
At the time, I also went against like track day stuff with cars. Mm-hmm. I started crunching some numbers at a later point and realized that I shouldn't track my daily because I still need to get to work.
Yeah.
Realized a second track car or a second car, so one can be a track car, one can be a daily, and then all the consumables and the money going into that. And then I didn't like a truck or a trailer or anything like that. So I was like, maybe financially speaking, this is like more of a dive into at least where I was at than I was prepared for at the time. So quickly you realize that was not like sustainable long term.
Okay, so like going back even further though, like growing up, do you have like what got you to, because at some point in your head you're like, I want to drive manual and I want to go do track stuff. I don't know if you wanted to race, I don't know where you wanted to go, but I want to drive a car on racetrack. What got you to that decision?
I was always, like, really into cars. And then after watching, like, stuff like Formula One or, like, different series of racing, different shows, and, like, obviously a lot of YouTube channels, I knew I was into cars. And I always wanted, like, you know, just try once to do the whole track thing because it seemed pretty fun. So that was what really initially piqued my interest. And then I kind of got bored of driving the Corolla. I wanted something that was, like, more exciting. I knew that stick shift was more involved, so I wanted, like, a more fun sport car. Okay. And granted, the FRS is still slow, but it is way more fun. I enjoy driving that thing every day. It really is the driver's car.
Slow cars are where it's at, in my opinion. It's kind of like bikes.
Even just downshifting to come to a stop and rev matching, and just even normal traffic, it's still way more fun than anything I was doing in an automatic.
Yeah. Okay. So you got yourself a stick shift, fun car, you're having some fun, you want to go do some track stuff. I don't know exactly where I came in during that, but I know that at that time, we were hanging out with friends, whatever, and I was definitely saying, like, hey, come do the bike thing, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you were kind of like, nah, dude, I'm good.
Well,
hey, for me.
Well, think about it this way. No real motorcycle experience at all.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't really ride bicycles. Didn't really do anything on two wheels, and then you were like, even drive stick at that time. I was like, well, I just want to drive a stick shift car. That bike stuff seems way out of left field for my expertise.
I'll give you some grace there, because I didn't, like, when I meet someone that doesn't ride motorcycles, I'm like, hey, you should ride motorcycles. They're like, oh, man, I don't know. Like, I've never done that. And blah, 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 blah. My two questions are usually, can you drive stick shift and have you ridden a bicycle? Or can you ride a bicycle?
That would have been a no and a no.
And a no. Yeah, so I'll give you that grace. Kind of wild. Flash forward a few years later, here we are. Neither of these bikes are his, but there are two in his garage. So there's that. all right. Yeah. So I guess, you know, you kept putting me off. What was the turning point?
You invited me to the track at one point, way back when we're in Washington, into the Ridge. And I came and saw it. That was back when the Gixxer was still blue with green wheels, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I came, I saw that, realized that looked pretty fun. And then we talked about, like, how much it costs, like, to fix the bike when you low-side it if you were to crash it. How much it costs, like, buy the bikes, to run the bikes. So for cars, you take it to the track. Theoretically, you could just take a stock car to the track, absolutely. But there's still a lot of stuff people do to their cars, like performance brakes, suspension, wheels, tires. And you don't have to do all of that, granted. But a lot of this, even the base level stuff.
The same stuff that people end up doing to their bikes.
Yeah. But at the point, like, to go to the track on a bike, just tape it up, send it, maybe frame sliders, heavily recommend frame sliders and engine covers, but, like, tape it up, send it, and you already have a performance package that's highly comparable to a significantly more expensive car, like, right out the box, like, that was attractive to me. And even the repair cost and cost of consumables, like, long-term was, like...
Yeah, I think that day that you came, I may or may not have put a bike down.
Yeah.
Which I think is kind of what sparked maybe that conversation of like, whoa, so what does it take to get this back on the road?
And then after that, one of my roommates at the time, he invited him to the track. Mm-hmm. So there's a few other mornings where I would help him load his bike to the track and go with him and another friend. And after that second time, I was like, all right, I got to get in. I don't know what's going on. I got to figure this out.
That was it. All right. Because, I remember you finally coming out to a track day. It was grin, ear to ear. You were like, this is awesome. This is crazy, whatever. And then... We actually didn't go to the track together until we were out here.
Yeah.
Because I left. I moved out here.
Yeah, because you left right before or right around the time I got my motorcycle license, mm-hmm. got my first bike. So you missed a lot of that admin work.
Yeah, so that admin work. We got to uncover or open that box. What went into that admin work?
Nothing much. That was just like going online, getting like a motorcycle safety course in my area to teach me how to ride a bike. Mm-hmm. Getting a bike to learn on.
How was the MSF, the basic rabbit course? You know, you're an interesting case for me. You've always, I enjoy getting your opinions because, like, I've never been in that scenario. I always wanted to ride a motorcycle. I grew up on bicycles. I didn't grow up on dirt bikes, but in high school, I went and bought myself a dirt bike. I had ridden, I think, my aunt's motorcycle, ran a parking lot a little bit. Like, I had a little bit of motorcycle background. It was very natural to me. So being on the complete opposite end, you show up at the basic rider's course as a brand new, like you'd never ridden before that, I assume?
So what happened was I ended up getting a bike. Don't recommend doing that first, obviously, because MSF will usually provide a bike for you.
Yeah.
And the other friend we talked about, the one who I was helping load his bikes, he took me to a parking lot, essentially, and we just like practiced like figuring that whole, like, this is a clutch, this is a front brake, this is a rear brake. And I'm like, why are there two brakes? I don't understand. And I figured out the whole clutch thing. At this point, I have drive stick, so like I kind of understood like clutch and shifting gears, but then it's like one down and then the rest are up unless your GP shift. I'm like, all right, what is that? He explains that to me, like, that's what the bike is. So we figured that out, and then like taking a couple hours to figure that out, get my feet on the pegs, trusting the bike point, shifting gears, all that stuff. Eventually then go to my MSF, take that. The way Washington was weird because you had the one MSF with like your classroom portion and your exam portion, mm-hmm. to get your permit, which will allow you to like not have passes or ride at night. And then there's another one, like the advanced course, which is what you actually need to get like your endorsement on the Washington license. And that's what allows you to like do all the rest of the stuff. So I did that. Definitely interesting. Did not have the same experience level as everybody else in the class, but we got through it. Some minor hiccups, but we got through it.
Did you put a bike down?
Yeah.
When I was in my BRC, there was a girl that, she'd never driven manual before. Never been on a motorcycle, never driven manual, and she actually did really well, but there was definitely a point where I felt so bad, because most of us had some motorcycle backgrounds, we were pretty good. She had like zero, never driven stick, and no idea how clutch gas, any of that even worked at all. So she's figuring it out, but she took the bike and essentially like wheelied it out from under her.
Whiskey throttle?
Yeah, and she just let it go, and it wheelied down and ran into a telephone pole. So she got up, punched the pole, got back on the bike, kept going. It was a good time. It was funny.
I will say, it's, as someone who's been riding a little bit more now compared to obviously back then, mm-hmm. it is so wild what just seat time will change. Like if I was riding for like a couple months prior to that, I don't think I had most of the problems that I had in the MSF courses that we eventually got through. I don't think it would have even been an issue. Just like figuring out like how to balance clutch, front brake, figuring out the whole rear brake thing for stability, like all of that. I think like ironed out if I've been riding for a few weeks before that. But I mean, the issue is technically if you're on the street, that's illegal. Yeah. But do that information what you will.
Well, you can get a permit without doing a course. You just have to go take a little written test to get a permit in most states. So,
yeah. If you're wondering. Yeah, state of Washington, like, you had to do that first.
Okay, so flash forward. Got the MSF done. You're out riding this, you're on a what, Ninja 650?
The first bike I got a Ninja 650.
Yeah. Okay.
Boring, standard issue. Looking for a 400, couldn't find one that fit. Or I couldn't find one for a good price. They're all sold out everywhere. I'm just getting a 650. No regrets. It was a good learner bike.
Okay. So, when you bought the bike, were you already like pre-decided, I'm going to go do track days?
Yeah, when I decided I was going to do the whole track day thing, like the second time I went to the track, I was like, I'm going to do the whole track day thing. So when I went to get my motorcycle gear with the other friend, I was like, what do I need to do the track? And he pointed out, you need this for the track, you need this. All my introductory gear was track focused with the exception of like a one piece suit. So I'm like, I'm not doing that on the street until I'm going to the track actually.
Okay.
So it's got a jacket and some pants.
There you go. Okay. So you had the fast line. None of the excuses. You were just like,
yeah.
Here you go.
This is what I want. How do I make this happen? He's like, do this, 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 and this. I'm like, all right, I'm doing this, 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 and this. What next? I'm like,
sweet. Yeah. Well, he did learn from the best. So what can I say? Okay. So how long though before he ended up getting to the track?
I think I got my license in like late 22 early oh late 20 early 22 and then no late 22 yeah late 22 and then some stuff for work kept me from riding for a prolonged period of time, but I did some street stuff in and out, and then I think the Ridge, August of 23 is my very first track day.
Okay,
so I've been riding on paper for a few months at this point, but realistically speaking, it was significantly on that because work had kept me away from riding, so mm-hmm. Kind of hit the ground running, and by that I mean riding really slow on the track.
Okay, so like realistically, we're looking what, like a day or two of riding time?
Yeah, electrical? Straight riding time, not a whole lot, yeah.
Okay, and then you just hit up the racetrack, one of the greatest in the U.S.
Yeah, definitely spoiled me. I thought they were all like that, because that's all I had known at that point. I've since been recalibrated, going to different tracks around the country so far, at least mainly the Southeast, but I want to go back.
Yeah, the Ridge is, it does that to you. I know you guys on the channel, if you've been here with us for a while, you hear about it all the time, but shout out to you guys up in the PNW. They get to ride there every year, all year.
Best part about it was like an hour south of where we lived, so it was like, it wasn't even that long of a ride.
Yep,
close track here is 2.5 hours.
Yeah, you could wake up, pack, and go, or pack the night before like a smart person. But all right, well, walk me through first track day. I assume you went with that other friend that we keep talking about?
Yeah, so I went to him the day before. It was a like a Friday, Saturday, or a Saturday, Sunday kind of deal. Mm-hmm. The day before, I went to like Cycle Gear, bought a one-piece tracksuit, like off the wall.
Oh, man, you mean it's that easy?
Yeah, I literally like, bought a Sedici, like $500 suit.
Yeah.
Found one that fit in my size, roughly. I would like to get a custom one now, but I realized if I was going to spend money, I want to make sure I'm committed first. Got that, got all the gear. One of my roommates, like, all right, I have a suit, I have gloves, I have boots, I have helmet. What do?
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, yeah, take off your lights, take off your mirrors, or take them off. I opted to take them up. Now I just...
What bike are we on?
This was the R7.
Okay, all right.
So since I had the Ninja, I also had an R7 because I didn't want to break the bike I would want to ride on the street. So I got a second bike, got a used R7.
Yeah.
Got a good price for it, relatively like low miles used. The guy who had it wanted to get like a BMW S1000, so he was military, so he was moving, so he wanted to get rid of it, so I got that. So I taped up the lights, taped up the mirrors for the first day, second day I just took the mirrors off. It was like,
okay,
well, that's a hassle.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty much it. Got some gas cans.
Okay.
Loaded the bikes in the back of his truck, went to the track and figured it out.
So you show up at the track, first track day. You get tech, you get a riders meeting, you got your first session, did you get a sighting lap? Like follow lap?
No.
No?
Completely raw dogged. So we got there. We essentially bought what were like the last few tickets in that group for Group C,
mm-hmm.
Group Charlie. They do A, B, C instead of like expert, novice, intermediate. But their C group was filmed by somebody else, like a group, like a company.
Okay.
So they split the A, so like the expert and the faster intermediates went to like their A group or their advanced group. Yeah. And then the slower intermediate and then the C group went into their second group that was going to ride. And then the third group was whoever rented it out. So I think it was like Ducati or some area over there.
Okay.
Like one day was like the MSF people who like teach MSF in that area. Mm-hmm. They had that. And like the second day was like Ducati of whatever that area was had it. So I was kind of in the fast slow boy group. Obviously the slowest one in that group. And there was no siding lap. There was no coaches to hire because like they were all sold out by the time we got there. So I kind of just went out for my first lap. Kind of figured out the lines. Not really. Okay. Second lap, went off the line. One of the coaches saw me. He was like, first time? I'm like, yeah. He's like, do you know the lines? I'm like, no. He's like, do you want me to show you? I'm like, yes, please. And he showed me the lines.
Yeah.
And it was really cool about it. So he showed me the lines. And I was practicing that for like the rest of the day.
Okay. Man, that's wild.
He was super helpful because he's like, obviously I didn't know what I was doing, right?
Yeah.
I was just happy to be involved.
Yeah. Oh, man. No coaching, no... Because I at least got a siding lap. Like, my first ever track day was like, hey, your first session for C group, if you've never been here before, go ahead and jump in with us. We're going to go do two laps, lead follow, show you how to get on, get off. Yeah, I can't imagine. How was it the first time, like, getting off the track?
You mean like going to the pit lane and coming off the track?
Yeah.
Because I was following him, I kind of knew where I was going. Also the ridge. When you come down that hill, ridge complex, waterfall, whatever you want to call it, when you come down, like, if you hold the line or if you're coming off, the track is very easy to tell where you want to go. You stay out wide, and then in the track itself, like this long opening, like red section of track that splits the pit lane for coming into the pits or going on the hot pits, and then what it would be the actual main straight. So it's very easy visually to see where you want to go. And then they had like the cones of the apexes. So you kind of use that to reference, like, hey, if you hit this apex, you're committed. If you stay out wide, you will pit out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. The ridge is pretty good for that.
The ridge is spoiled in every way.
Yeah.
Some other tracks are not as easy on the eyes when you're committed.
Yeah.
And because you're coming downhill, you can see it the entire way coming down. It's not blind like some other place like VR. It's like, be here or be here. Figure it out.
Yeah, good luck.
Not VR. I'm saying Alberta. There we go.
Yeah. Good old Alberta. Yeah, you come up over the... Come up under the bridge, and it's like, I don't know where I'm going. If I'm too far to the right, I am going into the pits. I'm going in at 60 miles an hour or more.
Yeah.
And a lot more. Oh, yeah. All right. Well, I mean, that kind of takes us to, so you got one track day under your belt out there, and then flash forward, you come across the country out to the East Coast. How many track days have you done now? Do you know?
I think I've done maybe six.
Six?
Okay. Maybe six or seven.
Half a dozen. And you've been... The Ridge?
So I was at the Ridge. I did CMP a couple times.
Okay, Carolina.
Carolina Motorsports Park a couple times. And then I was with Barber with you, North Carolina with you, Texas with you, Road Atlanta with you. I think the only place I've been without you since coming to the East Coast is the few times I've been at Carolina
Motorsports Park.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. That's more than six then, because you've done
seven.
That's six tracks.
Yeah.
You've been to CMP a couple times. That's pretty good.
So seven?
Good. So, yeah, I mean, you've seen the Ridge, you've seen Barber, you've ridden Road Atlanta. So that's three moto. You've got a pretty good record. It's not bad.
Hopefully next year I can do them a little faster this time. That's the goal. It's trippy because you finally, like, being so new, you're still figuring out, like, the whole racing line thing and then, like, how to stay online. And then you go to a track, you kind of figure it out. As you go someplace new, it's like, maybe I want to get familiar first, but I know that's may or may not be the right answer. So I try to expose myself to different things.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is different. I tell you all the time, like, I haven't been at the same track twice in well over a year now. It's pretty wild. You just show up to a new place and learn it as quick as you can. So, you still ride on the street, though.
I do still ride on the street.
And we are not against that here at JK Moto Podcast. In case you're wondering, no, we are not against it. If you have a street bike, you like riding on the street, definitely go for it. We are just also... track junkies, if you will. However, I don't really ride on the street a whole lot anymore. I question why I do anytime that I do, because out in South Carolina, the traffic and road surface is not
that is
super conducive.
True. Washington was better in terms of road surfaces in general. I'd argue traffic as well. At least the routes that I would frequent were more open freeway type areas.
Mm-hmm.
here, I kind of just got that itch, so I ride to get that out of my system because I'm not doing track days every weekend, but still. I would like to transition to riding track full time. We'll get there one day, though. Just not today.
Yeah, so, I mean, how often do you find yourself... Because I always, like, there are times where I'll go, like, a month or more between a track day, and I get the itch, right? Like, especially right now, like, we're in the off season. We just got back from Texas. That was nice. It was a good way to kind of, like, end the season, but it's going to be a couple months before I get back. I get that kind of, you know, get jittery, get the tickle. But usually when that happens, I'm like, man, I gotta get out on the road. I need to just go for a ride. And usually when I get out on the road, it doesn't really take care of it.
So in my case, it takes care of it in so much that I get to be on two wheels again. But it obviously is very different track riding, right? You're not going as fast. Obviously, there's a whole other driver aspect, whole safety aspect, right? You're not taking the same. You can't take the same risk, or you do, but like the consequences are so much higher.
Yeah, absolutely.
You take a corner too fast on a track, you low side, you're in the gravel, you might wreck the bike, but someone's going to come pick you up. If you don't get up, ambulance is going to come, they're going to pick you up, they're going to pick the bike up, bring you back to your pit. On a street, you low side, you went to the ditch, you hit a tree. If someone sees that happen, you just stay there.
That's true.
So I definitely take that in consideration around the street. Also, like, the street will never satisfy the track itch because you'll never get to go as fast safely. If that means, you theoretically could go as fast, but there's so much more to worry about.
Yeah, well, and I mean, there's some, I never understand those guys that are out in the canyons dragging knees and whatnot, just going absolutely nuts. Shout out to you guys, props to you if you can do it.
Everybody for it.
Yeah, but
I am not.
Not about that life, personally. Way too many things going on in my head to be doing anything near that. Back in the day, I thought, like, I used to ride a, what do they call it, Hurricane Ridge up in Washington. Yeah, and there's some, like, pretty nice tight turns up there. That one's scary because there's a cliff on one side.
Yep.
And so you're coming down and you're like, yeah, cliff. Nope. Look over here. Cliff. Like, cliff.
Don't look. There's a cliff
right there and you just get stuck on it. But, yeah, it's not the same. So that takes me, though, you mentioned the speed. You want to get back on two wheels. Once again, going back to when I met you, when you're first hanging out, first talking about motorsport, whatever. Big car guy, not motorcycle guy.
Yeah.
You mentioned crunching the numbers, talking about how much it would cost to do a car versus a bike. We talk about that all the time on here. Talk about it like, yeah, it's like the biggest argument the bike people have against car people is like, well, I'd save money big time. I got two less tires. The bike itself is way cheaper. To get a bike equivalent or to get a car equivalent is like you're paying a tenth of the price.
True. Right?
Or better than that, honestly, depending on what you're getting. But going back now, if you, like, today, with the experience that you have, let's say you had that experience before you ever started either of these, but you have the experience you have now, and you had unlimited money, which would you choose?
If money wasn't an issue, I feel like it'd be both. You know, that.
Yeah,
but if money was an issue, I still think I'd choose to do bikes just because it's more raw, visceral. Like, there are more inputs that you, maybe not more, but how do I phrase this? The inputs that you do on the bike, I feel like, matter more.
Mm-hmm.
People who are, like, really good track drivers in cars, they're really good, right? But when on a bike, it's like you're leaning, you're tipping, you're counter-steering, counter-leaning, pound balances, whatever techniques you're using, you're trail braking. Just, like, everything, like, when you're getting off the bike to, like, all the stuff you do just in track riding to slowly get faster or quickly get faster, like, I just think it's more dynamic than when compared to someone driving a car. And to me, well, it's just more fun.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear. I'm glad to hear that. It doesn't surprise me. That is the, when I talk to someone that's never ridden a bike before, I always throw out the quote that it's a new sense of freedom you didn't know you were missing.
Yeah.
Because there's just something about, like, I hate to be the guy that says that, but, like, you're not in a cage anymore, you know?
Yeah. If I drive my car too many days in a row, I think, wow, what if I rode instead? And then I realize I gotta get groceries or literally anything that's practical. I'm like, I should have scheduled better.
Yeah, it's hard to carry. You know, you can do it. I've known people that put the grocery bags on the handlebars.
I picked up packages and then driven to my garage, and let me tell you, car is better for some things, depending on the size or the weight of the package.
Yeah. Oh, man, that reminds me of a... Tire stand. Tires. Riding.
Yeah. I remember our friend used to do that. I remember one time he came to your house for a tire change, took the R1, rode to your house, and I had to put the tire stands in my car and drive behind him.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a good time. Yeah.
He was about it.
Yeah, I mean, it can be done. I don't recommend it, but it can be done, absolutely. That's good to know. Good to know that you are, in fact, bike people now, which is good. Because, you know, sometimes it's like, well, do it because it's cheaper, which is great. It is 100% cheaper, but I feel like a lot of people that do come over to the bike side, they get into it, and you realize how much more fun you can have because you have a lot more budget available.
True.
And then two, you start to get a feel for it and realize, like, no, these things are pretty freaking sweet, and it is the visceral word that you mentioned is...
The crazy thing about it is even the cheaper bikes, like, say what you want about, like, 400s and R3s and Ninja 400s and that whole category of bikes being, like, beginner bikes... I've seen plenty of people like R3s drag knees around people on significantly larger bikes.
Yeah, and it's
never not humbling to watch it happen to you or watch it happen to someone else and realize they can still move, even compared to some cars. It depends on like what the car is for or whatever, but like they can still move. Then you get up to like the R7, G650s, or like 600s in general, like go from parallel twins to like inline fours, cylinders, like a 600 category, and then it gets a leader bike. It's like, twist the throttle, you're going. You're going places.
Yeah.
It's not a thing that you can buy that scale of performance at such a price. Like $5,000, Ninja 400, $10,000, probably get like a ZX10R or something like that.
I mean, you can get an old...
Even cheaper, depending
on what you're doing. K5 Jigsaw 1000, you know?
Yeah.
$4,500, I think, is what they're going for.
I spent too much time on Facebook Marketplace seeing like track craft bikes, and I'm like, Nope.
The leader bikes are insane. That's for sure. They are. It's a different animal.
One day.
It's a different animal.
Next year.
All right.
Maybe we'll see.
I'll hold you to it.
We have our one at home, you know?
Yeah.
That R1's got to find a home. We'll find a home
there.
For it.
There you go. All right. Can we get a favorite track so far? Just curious.
Barber?
Okay.
The Ridge is really high on the list, but... All-time favorite so far that I've seen, I think, is Barber.
What makes it Barber?
Let's grip everyone on that track. It's so flowy. There's no, like, real straight, per se, other than the main straight, but there's a bunch of curves you can kind of, like, link up if you, like, hit them right to get a lot of good drive. And some of those, like, hills, I don't know if it's, like, turn four, going, you're on gas, you're going over the hill, you just got to have faith. You just hit your vision markers and just have faith. Something I struggled with because I'm, like, I don't have faith yet. That place under the bridge, and then even from a spectator, because we went there for Moto America, there's all the places you can go and you get really good vantage points of the entire track.
Yeah.
I had some of the most fun I had both spectating and then riding that track.
So it could be a little bit of the entire weekend that you did there, not just the riding.
Yeah. Road Atlanta is also pretty fun just because it's like, send it.
Yeah, what is your opinion? Is it as a newer guy, and I'm not trying to pick on you here, but as a slower guy, I'm not fast. I didn't set a good time at all at Road Atlanta, so don't catch me wrong there. But as someone riding in the lower group at a much slower pace, what was your take on Road Atlanta?
I liked it a lot. It had a lot to teach me. I had a lot to learn from it. Some of those corners, just the way you set them up, were just really good, and some like just the nuances of that track.
Mm-hmm.
I still had a lot of fun. I understand there's a lot more time to be gained if I go back there in the future, and then obviously at a higher skill for myself, but I still had a lot of fun.
Okay. So then let's flash forward to MSRH. That was quite the trip. I mean, we just kind of covered that with Josh Bittinger, 2 weeks ago now, I think. So sorry if we repeat a little bit, but it was a great trip, and this is the buddy that I was talking about that was... they're with me on the trip, so sorry about the long drive. 17 hours straight to the butt. Not good.
That was a time.
Yeah, this is a lot of driving. But 4 straight days and nothing but two-wheel fun. What do you think?
I loved it. I had a lot of bad habits that I had corrected. I learned a lot of just stuff in general that I didn't know before, because I never had like a whole lot of coaching prior to, right? It was just like people would show me the lines, and sometimes like a control rider or a coach would follow you, like, hey, I noticed you doing this, you might want to try this, or I noticed you like looking here, or you're putting the bike here, you might want to tip it here or put the bike here to get X, Y, Z. So I've had some of that, but I didn't have, like, that was the first time I ever had, like, dedicated, like, coaching outside of, like, the line is here, follow me for the line. The whole video behind you, like, I thought was, like, the most helpful, because it was like, you're doing this here, here's proof you're doing this here.
Yeah.
Do this instead, and if you fix it, I'll have video to show you that you fixed it. Like, that was really helpful.
Yeah, able to actually sit down afterward and, like,
and the fact that the feedback was, like, immediate. It was like, you come in, you do, like, 30-minute session, 15 minutes, you follow you, 15 minutes, you follow me. So, like, I felt like we both got the coaching that we needed. Because, like, 15 minutes, like, for a lot of places is a full track session.
Yeah.
So then you come back in and be like, all right, you did this. And then the turnaround time was immediate. You could go back out. Especially if the, depending on, like, the open wheels or the regular cars there or the bikes there would delineate if you have 20-minute sessions, 30-minute sessions, or just open track.
Yeah.
I know the second day we rode, when it rained, we had open track for the first hour and a half. I was sweating.
Yeah, it was nuts.
I was like, I got to get my money's worth.
Unfortunately, it was wet. I didn't have any wet tires.
Benefits of still being on DOTs.
Yeah.
Could slowly go around the track safely.
Yeah, I was a little mad at myself for not taking an extra set, but that's okay. Yeah, I mean, dude, I totally agree.
There's also a lot more grip in the rain than I've... That's my first time riding on a track in the rain, and every lap I go, I found that there's actually a lot more grip than I previously thought. It was actually pretty interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's wild. The things you'll do on a motorcycle on a racetrack compared to on the road. And to this day, if it rains on the road, despite my knowledge of tires and all these different things, I still freak out. Yeah. Especially, like, I'll be coming up to take a turn at a red light, and as I'm coming up, I'm, like, on the brakes, and then I see the arrow on the ground that's painted.
It's like, ooh, like, changing traction.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, that's going to be slippery, and I freak out about it. You're out on the track, and it's like, you just kind of, I don't know, outside of, like, professional racing, how many people really have the guts to, like, actually use the rain to its full potential. And even in professional racing, you'll see, like, there are some people that do better in the rain than other people, and that's because it really is more of a guts show than anything else. Like, if you got the guts to go for it, the bike probably has the grip. Yeah. There's definitely some nuances to that, some smoothness to the throttle and brakes and everything else that you have to do, but if you got the guts to get out there and do it, and you can maintain that smoothness, you're probably going to be better than everyone else. And I feel like, especially as a new rider, or just a track goer in general, you get out to the track in the rain, and it just kind of, as you slowly pick up the pace, like you said, you're just like, oh, there's still grip, and you just start riding almost normal. At least for me, my first rain day, it was like, I feel like I'm going just about as fast as I normally do. I'm leaning just as far as I normally do and all those different things. So I will say, Josh was pretty impressed with your... tenacity in the rain, and how willing you were to just get out and go for it. He said for a new rider, especially with zero background or zero experience or little experience, most people would just be like, no, I'm good. So he's pretty happy about that. But we didn't just do the two track days, but did do some other things.
Yeah, we did, what was it? One of the days we did some dirt riding that was also new to me. It was the day after we did the mini mode. He was like, do you have any dirt bike experience? I was like, the dirt bike experience I have is the dirt bike experience I had with you yesterday on the skid pad. Like, that is my dirt riding experience. So it was that, not in the dirt.
Yeah, I've been on a dirt bike yesterday in a parking lot with you. Yeah. The mini moto stuff, I don't want to cover that too much tonight. We actually will be talking about that next Monday. Anyway, one of the videos is coming out soon, so keep an eye out for it. After it comes up, I'll post a link so you'll see that here. But the dirt, the flat track, that was very interesting for me. Just me learning, but also me watching you.
Struggles?
Yeah, struggle, sure, yeah. But I didn't know how to help you out. And Josh didn't either. You know, Josh, the riding coach, shout out to Josh. You were great. You were super helpful that weekend. It was awesome. I loved it. But both him and I were like, well, I don't know. And he's not a dirt coach, so I'm going to give him that grace all day long. He was just kind of taking us through some things that people have coached him through. And he hasn't had much time to build any curriculum or anything around the dirt yet, so... Maybe we were a good test for that, but first drill, right? We set up a tire, and you're supposed to slam the brake and do a 90-degree, like, kick the rear out.
It's like the issue with that drill, one of the things I struggle with is, like, the limited experience I have that is muscle memory does not want me to lose traction on the rear wheel and slide it out anyway. Mm-hmm. My muscle memory is, like, keep the bike up, ride it out.
Yeah.
And then come to a stop or continue riding, whatever. So that was, like, difficult for me because all my, like, muscle memory would have me do the opposite of that. So I would just come to a stop and be like, all right, sweet. I come to a stop and be like, turn up. Nope, that's not what I want. Come to a stop. Turn up. That's not what I want.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, that makes sense. Up to that point, like, the whole goal of riding a motorcycle is to keep it upright. It was weird for me, and, like, some of this is repeat, but on a bicycle, I do that all the time. Right, like as a little kid, I would do that all the time. So when he said to go do that, there was no like mechanical to it for me. It was just, I know how this feels from a long time ago. Let's see if I can still do it. And I went and did it. So to teach you how to do that, I was like, I mean, you kind of just do it. I don't know. I think what I ended up telling you was like stare at the tire and try and just drive around it while you slam the brake. I think that worked.
Yeah, that worked.
So if you're a newbie to riding in the dirt and you're trying to slide a bike out, act like you want to go the other way. And slam the rear brake and see what happens. And generally, the muscle memory will get you to put your foot down and keep the bike up. We had a 17-hour drive to talk about all this, so I've gotten most of these answers. That whole weekend, I feel like, was kind of maybe eye-opening for you, or at least it's got to be helpful.
Absolutely.
What do you think was like the most helpful part of that weekend?
The dirt ride was definitely a new experience. The skid pad stuff, we'll talk about that later, but that was... Fixed a lot of bad habits I had that mm-hmm. I didn't know I had, and then taught me things that I didn't even know I needed to do.
Okay.
In some things, because like I said, I didn't have any formal coaching before that. It was just like, go around our parking lot, all right, do the MSF, or I can do some stuff on the street now legally. Mm-hmm. And I go to the tracks and show you the lines and like figure it out from there. So like, definitely wish I had a few more years of riding experience under my belt prior to that, but not in a way that would make me want to wait to start doing track stuff. You know?
Yeah.
I just wish I was exposed to two wheels earlier in life, to be honest.
Yeah.
But the one-on-ones with Josh and the video feedback, I think, was like the most helpful stuff. Because you come in, he'll tell you what to fix, and you go do it around a few corners. He's like, all right, you're doing good in those few corners. You can pick up the pace there. Here, you suck at X, Y, Z. We need you to fix this, this, and this. He's with the video. You put the bike here, X, Y, Z. And then you like, go fix that. Like, all right, that was good. What do you think you need to work on? I'm like, well, I'm having trouble with this, this, and this. I'm like, all right, this is what you look like here. Go fix that. And he's like, you can work on different things all throughout the day. And because it was open track at like 9 till 5, like 9 a.m. to 5, and like you're the only ones there. Like, I think the first thing to track, it was just us, Josh, you, and myself. Like, that was it. The first day, that was it.
Yeah, there was, I think it was like one other guy that showed up for a little bit.
Yeah, he was here for like a couple hours, mm-hmm. and really like all day. And the second time we went, there were more people, but still significantly less than you had in a singular group on a track day. I think that is the most open amount of track I've ever had to just a small group, with the exception of like 1 10-minute track day, everybody went home. So they open tracked it.
Yeah.
And even then, like, there was some more than we had here.
Yeah. That was probably the craziest part, was just getting out there and being like, I'd go around and do like 3 or 4 laps without seeing anybody. Yeah. And every once in a while, I'd like see you way off over there and be like, oh, I'll go, you know, and catch up to you eventually, or the session be over, whatever it be. So you're saying the video footage, the mini motos, I don't want to do a full review on it or anything like that. But yeah, it was kind of nuts. To like slow down that much and really kind of blow everything. Like, I feel like it was really good at like, let's say there's 10 things you need to ride a motorcycle. And usually when you're out of the track day or getting ready for a race weekend, or you're getting some coaching, you're working on all of them. You know, your line, your vision, your body position, your braking, your gas, like all of those things. You're trying to get all 10. I don't have an actual number for it, so I'm not like saying that these are the 10 things, but you're trying to get these 10 things that you need nailed all at once, all at the same time. You get out on mini motos with Josh, and it was like, all right, cool. Number one. That's it. Throw everything else out the window. Let's focus on number one. We're going to do that for 15, 20 minutes. Okay, cool. We got that nailed down. Forget number one, number two. And then get that done. Cool. Forget those two. Number three, number four. You do all of that, and then you're like, all right, now let's combine 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Here's a drill. Sweet. All right, now go. Anyway, it was awesome. Definitely eye-opening to a lot of things that, like, I knew, I had heard before, but I'd never been able to put in practice because I'd never gone out and, like, focused on something so individually like this. That was huge to get that kind of...
In my case, some of that stuff, like, I wasn't even aware that I should have been doing.
Yeah.
So it was, like, good to add new tools to my, like, toolbox, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, the track toolbox. Yeah. I do like the track toolbox.
There's a few drills I was like, oh... That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I gotta ask, only because I do brag to people about my cross-country trips. Was it everything you'd hoped and dreamed?
Yes.
Okay. 17-hour drive worth it?
Absolutely.
All right. All right, good. All right, good.
I'll do it again. I'll do it again probably like at least once a year.
There we go. We're already going to do an annual. It'll be a thing. The annual JK Moto Entertainment trip to Bittinger Motorsport Campus.
Hopefully I can show them all the stuff I've improved by then.
Hey, if not, you know, he'll be right there with the camera. it was awesome. Yeah, having that, like, you're able to come in. He's like, all right, come here. Laptop pulls up. It's right there. It's like, look, you messed this up. Interesting. One of the things that I will probably never fix, and Josh, I apologize for that, but I will probably never fix this, and I don't know how to. The shaking the head thing.
After you blow a corner?
Yeah. When you mess something up, and you're just like, gosh, dang it, right? And he said, stop doing that. I know you blew the corner. You know you blew the corner. Get over it. Move on. It's like so natural for me now to just like.
I think it also ties also with the whole getting your own deadhead thing. It's like, depending on how long you dwell on that, if it bleeds to the next corner, you now have a chain of events.
Yeah.
Suboptimal performance as opposed to like, look where you're supposed to look, get back on the line, figuring it out.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I feel like it's a very natural just like blow something, do something stupid. Part of it's like so the people behind me. There is a part of my head where I'm like, okay, I got to let the people behind me know that I recognize that that was dumb and that I don't normally do that. So they recognize that I recognize that that was just a simple mistake. We made a quick mistake. We're going to fix it and move on. We're going to be good to go. Because it just goes into that whole, you want to be predictable out there? But you want to be predictable. And so if you mess something up, I don't want the people behind me thinking like, oh, what is this guy going to do next? So I kind of throw the head shake in there so that they recognize, like, oh, okay, he just made a mistake. He recognized it. Cool, we're all good to go. And there's times where, like, if I make a big mistake and I know there's someone right behind me, I'll try and, like, just kind of be offline and let them go so I can have a minute to myself to get my head right, whatever else it might be. Whether or not that's right or wrong, I don't know. But that's kind of what I do. But, yeah, I mean, we went ride Atlanta together, NC Bike together, Barber, and MSRH. Out of those trips, from the trip side, which one was your favorite?
Like road trip aspect?
Yeah, just track day trip.
You make the road trip there, or like the while we were already there?
The whole experience. I know, so we talked about Barber being your favorite track, talked about MSRH being a great time. MSRH might be hard to beat because it's a 17-hour drive, yeah, but then four straight days.
That was a treat. We got spoiled that day.
Yeah.
That week.
But, I mean, Road Atlanta, it's iconic.
Road Atlanta is iconic. The whole logistics behind Road Atlanta was interesting because we're supposed to leave way earlier than we did, but we had to get out of work first. But we had another friend who was also coming from Virginia who was going to meet us here to head over. Mm-hmm. So he ended up driving straight at 8 hours there. We ended up at the hotel like the night before, and then we did that. So that was just, and then it was going to rain for a little bit, then it wasn't.
It did rain. It rained the night before.
Yeah.
Because we were going to go set up at the track.
Yeah. And then sometime unloading, I pulled a nail in my back tire, which definitely did not have a nail in it when we loaded it.
Yeah, that was...
Because we're losing pressure on the track after we loaded. We definitely had pressure the day before.
Yeah.
So I had to get like a new rear and then did a re-tech at the end of tech. So that was like...
In the morning. Yeah. Hey, shout out to tech for finding the nail on your tire.
Yes, true.
Glad that we found it then and not while you were out. Yeah. And the freaking the gas stations weren't open in the morning. I don't know if anyone else has had this experience, but I gotta call it out. If you go to Atlanta, Road Atlanta, the night before, we mentioned our buddy coming down from Virginia. It was 8 hours for him. He said he stopped at a gas station and all the lights were out and the pump wasn't working.
The morning of, we went to a few gas stations because they were closed.
Yeah, we went for breakfast. You know, grabbed the old Mickey D's
because we wanted to load gas up before the track gas prices.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a good time. It was fun. No, it was weird. All the lights were out. We went to the pump, and none of the pumps were working. We tried like 3 or 4 different pumps, went across the street to a different gas station, tried a few pumps there. Nothing was working. So if you're in Red Atlanta, apparently you got to get fuel before it goes dark because it goes dark and like it goes dark. Everything just shuts off. It's strange. So out of all the experiences that I've had doing a track day, I've never not been able to stop in the morning for fuel. That's like the go-to. You get to the hotel, you get to bed, try and get some sleep. That night was not the best for sleep because we pulled in so late.
Yeah.
Buddy showed up after midnight.
Yeah. Because you had to get out of work and then drive 8 hours.
Yeah. Yeah, it was rough. Got some sleep, wake up, get some breakfast. That's one of the first times I've had breakfast before the track day. I don't normally eat in the morning. And then go to get fuel and there's no fuel. And then I lost my gas cap.
a lot of technical problems.
Yeah, that was. I never thought about that. You had a nail in your tire. I lost my gas cap on the first session.
Other friend low-sided.
Low-sided the bike. That's pretty standard.
And then a couple other buddies who were there also had some technical issues.
That's true, yeah. The one didn't have his brakes. So he didn't... I don't know if he really rode most of the day. The other guy wrecked his bike in, what, the second or third session?
Yeah.
Didn't ride the rest of the day. Yeah, Road Atlanta was a... I should stop going to Atlanta. Because now I'm thinking back to when I went to AMP, Atlanta Motorsports Park, about a year before that. I went down and watched Moto America. Well, I did the track day first and then watched Moto America at Road Atlanta. That was the year I laid the Aprilia down at Atlanta Motorsports Park. Carnage. Show up to watch Moto America the next day, and there was a fire. Like, a bike caught fire and was... That was rough. I don't know if you guys remember that. 2023 Road Atlanta Moto America in turn 10A, 10B. I don't remember who it was, but it was scary because it like caught fire, was going a little bit. One of the corner workers came over with a fire extinguisher, started hitting it, and then like got pretty close to it. Fire extinguisher went out, so he dumped it, and then the bike went kaboom, like right in his face. It was a pretty scary time.
I think most ever seen like that HP4 at NC bike just smoldered in the grass for a bit.
Yeah, and this was a the bike was it was rough. They took care of it. Everyone was fine, but that I don't know that corner worker had eyebrows left after that one. I guess how close he was to it. At least from my view, it looked pretty rough. Yeah, insane. And then we go to Road Atlanta and no gas. To be fair, I think.
We found a gas station eventually.
Well, we had filled up beforehand. So we filled up before we left. So we were good. But now we're loaning gas to our buddy because he didn't.
That's what happened. Yeah, he had to buy a refill later at the track. Yeah.
Yeah. Which track prices are
not standard issue.
Yeah. Little nuts. But
they had racing fuel.
That's true. You can get race gas if you need it. Oh, man. So. I guess we're getting towards the end here. You already answered the question of like going back now, knowing what you know, would you pick cars or bikes? But we talk all the time. This is what this podcast is focused around, is getting other people to the track. It took persistence from me in inviting you out before you sold it. But how many people now have you tried to convince?
Anybody that tells me they're down the street at anything more than like a casual level, I ask them to move into the track. If the answer is no, I'm like, well, have you considered it? And usually they go like, well, usually it's like, I don't know where one is near here. And I tell them where the nearest one is and how close it is. And then usually the next biggest like resistance you hear is like, I don't have the gear for it. Like, well, if you have riding boots, which a lot of them usually do have some kind of riding boots that go over the ankle.
Yeah.
Or gauntlet gloves. But the biggest thing I've had pushback on is like either A, I don't have a suit, and it's like, well, a lot of places let you zip to like leather two-piece suits up, or you got a one-piece suit, just figure what your track day work requires. And you just walk into Cycle Gear and buy whatever you need. You can walk into a Cycle Gear and buy all the gear you need for a reasonable amount of money. And then a lot of stuff, once you buy it, it's yours. You don't need to like buy it again, which is what I ran into when I got my $500 like one-piece Shinichi suit. Serve its purpose. I've gone down in it, and I'm perfectly fine.
Yeah.
I still ride in it.
Yeah, the Kmart brand works.
Yeah.
It works.
Usually that's the only pushback you get, and then if they give you pushback after that, it's usually like they think it's more expensive than it really is, and when you like get into it, it doesn't have to be that expensive unless you commit to it long term.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you're doing a random track day, it's like
$200 depending on the track.
People don't, when you hit them with like, it's a $200 ticket, they're like, wait, what?
Unless you're going like Coda or something, like an actual expensive high-end track.
Yeah, say Coda, VIR, I know is normally like $300. Coda, you're going to pay $500-$600. If you go out to Laguna Seca, you're going to pay $500 or more. Like a couple of the big tracks like that, the track costs more to rent, so the org's going to charge you more. But generally, most of the country is $200. And sometimes less than that. So
I think it also goes into like not having a person to take you or like walk you through how to do it the first time.
Like so when they they need a track dad.
Yeah.
Like so would you have not gone had you not had a track older brother?
Probably not initially.
Okay.
Unless So when you took me to that track the one time, I knew in that moment I wanted to do it, and I was going to figure it out regardless. Mm-hmm. But for somebody who's just being invited casually, if they don't have someone to, like, show them this, it's like, they probably won't do it. Once I did it the first time, after that, I was like, all right, I can use it on my own. Like, all I needed to do is this, 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 and this. If I don't have a vehicle, I can rent a vehicle to do this, 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 and this. And you're good to go. But for the very first time, someone on the street who, like, is vaguely interested, they probably want someone to, like, help them
along.
And then once they figure out how to do it for themselves, it's like, all right, we can be self-sufficient now.
That makes sense. I will say this is something I get a lot. I've gotten the no suit. I've gotten the, I don't have the money. It's too expensive. I'm like, well, it's really not. And I tell them that, they're just like, oh, really? I'm like, yeah. They're like, well, I don't have a trailer. Like, I actually just ran into that the other day. Dude was like, yeah, man, I don't have a trailer. I'm like, I have a trailer.
You can also rent a trailer. You can rent a trailer from U-Haul.
You can do that. And then I laughed because I was like, I have a trailer. Or, like, if I need to take two bikes still, we can always just throw one in the back of the truck. And then I looked at him and I'm like, you own a truck? He's like, yeah. I'm like, just put it in the back of the truck. He's like, whoa. I'm like,
yeah,
bro, like, that's not... Anyway, if you're holding out, if for some odd reason you're watching this podcast and you're still on this podcast, or if you got a buddy that's holding out, and it's just simply, like, I don't know, comment. Leave me a comment. Let me know what, like, what's the actual reason. Why do you guys not want to go?
I do think that the biggest real main cost is something that they don't want to go, or I will say that the money, like, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that $200 ticket plus a $500 suit, and then, like, if you don't have, like, the right gloves or boots, you got to buy gloves or boots.
Yeah.
Some of that stuff is, like, probably, what, $1,000 or just shy of. That is an amount of money. I won't pretend that it's not. So for some people, that is a thing.
I'll give you that, right?
Especially a lot of younger riders, too.
Yeah. I'll give you that all day. If you just started riding, just got your bike, you're not quite ready to pull the trigger on all that yet, I got it. That is one thing. Like, if you got a new friend that's starting to ride, you're like, I'm going to get into the track one day, maybe go tell them to get, like, when you're poking towards what gear to get, make sure that it's also track-worthy gear so we can solve those problems. I don't know. But, yeah, I'll give you that one. I think, you know, my personal opinion is that a lot of people are scared. Most guys won't admit it. But I think there's a lot of people that are scared of realizing they're actually slow, even if they do admit it. I know I was a little afraid of finding out that I was slow. I knew I was slow, but I also didn't realize how slow I was, to be fair. But yeah, I think people are kind of just a little scared of the track for some other reason, which boggles my mind, because...
I will say this. If you're scared that you're slow, I think the safest place to get faster at the fastest pace is objectively the track. Even after my first track day, I was objectively, at the end of that, my track weekend, I was faster than I was going into it. Just because, like, I was able to figure out, like, how much grip do I have at this speed going to this corner, like, what my skill level threshold was. And then I'm like, all right, well, if my level, I can safely approach what my actual 100% limit is here. And then now I know what it is. So now less than that is still higher than what I was doing in the streets. I didn't know.
Yeah.
You're not taking a necessary risk unless you are, but that's a whole different discussion. So.
Well, and so that's a good question, too, I guess, to kind of to finish this off, the final topic. How much of an accelerated learning curve, do you think you have had? So you've been riding now for 2 years. That's it. With no background before that. Didn't grow up. Like, a lot of people that ride motorcycles, when they get older, they grew up on dirt bikes. Or they grew up with, you know, their dad had a bike or whatever it might be. They have some sort of motorcycle background before that. But you being literally brand new, like, showed up to a BRC with, I've ridden around a parking lot because my buddy made me before I came and did this.
Yeah.
To now, got six track days under your belt at six different racetracks across the country. How much of a, like, progression learning curve have you had, do you think, based off of you solely been on the street for the past 2 years?
I think it's just inherently higher, unless you're on the street taking risks that you don't really need to be taking. You're all adults, theoretically, so that's up to you what risks you decide to take.
Mm-hmm.
I think just being in a safer environment in general helped me accelerate at a faster pace, because I'm not 100% send it type person normally. In some things, yes, but in something where it's like, I literally have no idea what I'm doing here. Maybe speeding isn't the best idea on the street, especially with, like, other drivers and, like, now the road conditions. Washington's cool, but now the road conditions here, too. Like, if I make a mistake, there's more consequences. On the track, it's just you can more comfortably go a lot faster, a lot safer. And then you have people who point out what you can do better to improve stuff. And then a lot of guys that track, they're all super helpful. They all want to help you for the most part. You do have some guys who are less helpful than others, but for the most part, everybody wants to see the community grow. So everybody's really helpful. So you take that lessons to the street, I think you'd just be inherently a safer rider. Unless you're on the street and you're like taking your practice seriously, you're doing drills, you're actually practicing on the street, which I would argue the average person rides probably just rides from point A to point B. They're not doing that.
Generally.
You can argue that all you want, but I don't think the average person does practice. I think objectively the safest place to get faster would be on the track.
There. I mean, I agree with that. I can't really, can't argue on that one. it's weird to think about, like where I was. I thought I was fast, dude. I thought I was wicked. Back when, like, before I ever did the track day, or even after, I think the worst time for me, like, if you look back at my, like, total motorcycle riding experience, I think the worst time where, like, I was the most vulnerable and thought I was the least vulnerable was right after my first track day. There was about a year between my first track day and my second where I didn't ride for a while. I didn't do track days for a while because I was like, nah, I'm good. Realistically, it was because I was way slower than I thought I was going to be. I didn't drag my knee the first time out, and I was like, I guess I don't need to do that in life. But I got back out on the street, and I was like, I've done a track day. I'm super fast now. I'm super safe. I can go do all this stuff now. Now I know what it takes to drag knee. I can probably go drag my knee on the road. Like I thought I was this king of all riders to a degree, because I had this one day of very terrible slow track experience. For reference, I was doing like 232s at the Ridge, which is only a minute off of Moto America pace, you know, so it's really not that bad. it's eye-opening. It's nuts to think back to that day. And I'll be the first one to tell you, I'm still slow as crap. I'm still super slow on the road. If I ever ride on the road, it's like kind of weird to me how not comfortable I am on the road. Take me to the racetrack and like I'm a very middle of the pack B group rider pace wise and everything, but I'm so much more comfortable there. You get up to pace pretty quick and I'm comfortable, I'm chilling, I'm good to go. Get out on the street and it's like
the street's also trippy because you can do everything 100% right and still tow your bike. Somebody else could just have a like you'd be having a great day. Everything right, somebody else could just do the wrong thing, that's true, and then now you have a total bike, so it's like
and also the like way higher possibility of a total you. So
yeah, that's the part that scares me though. On the street is like you could have, I've seen plenty of videos, somebody just minding their business and some of the cars like you get stopped like getting by a car, it's like
from behind when there's a anyway, we don't need to go into any and all of that. It's cool to sit down and actually get your kind of full story. I know I've gotten this whole story, but not in this scenario before. So it's cool. Thanks for joining me.
Anytime.
Hopefully you guys enjoyed getting to know Kelly, one of my, dare I say it, track sons.
Thanks, Dad.
In my track dad career. We should start a website. It should be a website like trackdads.com.
Adopt a track son. Yeah. Kelly the sport.
Anyway, if you find yourself being a track dad, throw a comment down in the description, hashtag track dad. We'll start something with that because it's got to be a thing. Always bring more water than you think you need. Because that's like the number one thing. No one brings enough water.
North Carolina's all over that.
Hashtag drink water, go faster. Shout out to Lugnut. Anyway, we thank you guys all for listening and or watching. If you're on YouTube watching with us, please recognize that there is a listening version, so you don't have to sit down and watch the whole thing if you don't want to. Appreciate it if you do. But if you're here on YouTube, subscribe to the channel. Find the link down in the description for our RSS feed that'll take you to whatever podcast platform you listen on. You can listen from there. Follow us on there also. Leave us some comments. Leave us a review. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all those ones. Reviews go a long way. We appreciate them. Even if they're bad, I want to know about it. Appreciate any and all feedback. So let me know. But thank you guys for listening. Hopefully you enjoyed. I learned a little bit about my track son, Kelly, over here, and our adventures together. And we'll see you guys in the next episode.